Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 113, Hope for the Children, Honduras. A conversation with Tony Belize. Tony is the founder and director of Hope for the Children. You can check it out, hopeforthechildren.org. He travels around to some of the poorest places on Mother Earth, Bolivia, Myanmar, Nicaragua, the Bronx, Navajo lands, and today he'll be talking about Honduras. He's also the editor of Soul Fountain, a journal of poetry, which is going from print now, transitioning to online. He's a performance artist using the name Zero Gravity, and a frequent guest and friend of Between the Lines. Tony also runs and hosts a performance space in his home called The Vault. You can check out his website for that as well. This is your host, Monk. Thanks for listening. Welcome again, Tony Belize, to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to be back.
Good. Good to hear from you again. I know you had mentioned not too long ago traveling to Honduras and wanting to share what's going on there, which, again, I love learning from people who have been to places especially, and I don't know too much. So I've got a few things to mention, but maybe any place you want to start with what you were doing there?
Well, you know, I visited my brother and his family out in Arizona back in August. And over the course of my time, I was exposed to a number of people really kind of mouthing off about this phenomena of like the 57,000 kids coming over the border illegally. And, you know, people were just really kind of mouthing off and like, you know, all this and that. And I was like, well, does anybody really know what they're running away from, like what their lives are like, what might possibly be going on that a mother would take a chance by putting her child in the hands of a stranger and hoping to God that somehow they end up in the United States. I mean, does anybody know what might be going on there that would cause a mother to take a chance like that, to cause families to fall, you know, come apart like that? And nobody really knew, and everybody was shooting their mouth. So I said, you know what, maybe I better go. And I really didn't know much about Honduras either. The only thing I knew is that it was what the country they had, I guess, was known as the Banana Republic.
Uh-huh.
And because of the presence of the banana company, Chiquita Banana Company, I guess. And the other thing I knew was that they had the highest murder rate on Earth by far.
Yeah, that I had just recently read in some article, I forget exactly where, calling it like the murder capital of the world, which is like, oh my God.
Yeah, you're thinking of all these crazy places on Earth, I'm like, Honduras. And then I discovered that the murder rate is double the second place country, which is Venezuela, which was another surprise for me. But anyway, so I'm like, my God, what's going on? Yeah, so that was the thing. That's how I ended up there. I was curious about, you know, what really is it like, and then come back and just be able to share what I learned from being down there. And it was pretty hellish, what I discovered.
Now, you know, the little bits that I know is that, like Manuel Zelaya, there was a coup. He was the president around 2009. And so he was like, you know, unjustly overthrown in some way. Probably, I don't know, probably the U.S. involved in somehow. Is that, do you know about that? Or is that affected, or was this go way back before that?
I got a feeling whatever's wrong there has been wrong in place for a while. Mm-hmm. It's pretty entrenched. I know the United States has a huge, huge military base. I mean, the size of which you almost can't believe.
Hmm.
There, when I drove by, it was just drove forever, and it was still the base. I'm like, really? So the United States military presence is very, very strong there, as far as with it having a large base.
Right.
Yeah, that's about all I know. As far, I don't know much about dictators or leaders overthrown or whatever.
Is there like something, because I was wondering before talking to you, is there something along the lines of like what makes it such a key, you know, like a key zone, geographically or economically? Is there something that, you know, is creating it as a hot spot for all this trouble?
Yeah, you're absolutely, that's the question, and I discovered the answer, and it actually is geography.
Okay.
The geography is that they have proximity to both coasts, and so much of the drugs coming from South America are going through Honduras.
Hmm.
And if anybody would like to know, like, well, what makes this particular country far worse, or what is the nature of the problems? Why are the families trying to get their children out? It's all the factors that contribute to poverty and chaos and violence in even places like American cities. It's all the same phenomena. You know, I work with kids in jail here in New York every Friday. And the symptoms that I've observed over 17 years that make up these kids' lives, and we all know the story, we all know the drill about what happens in, you know, deep poverty, and what are the factors that crisscross that make for a hellish life for the young and for the adults. The same factors, all of them, are present there. The things that amplify it, that turn it from, you know, a really negative to horrific, are two things. One is the extra special location for the drug cartels and the drug traffic, and the other thing is the corruption of the police. So you take a fact where, you know, police are not fairly paid; they're all on the take, looking the other way, while a lot of horrific things, you know, a lot of drug trafficking is going on. This makes they're always going to stop anybody. So when you are a drug gang and you have nobody, there's no impunity at all, that's when the violence that you hear about and that I got to see, you know, gets to occur.
Hmm. I just watched online this documentary called The House I Live In by Eugene Jarecki.
You're blowing my mind.
And it was just taken off. I sent it to some friends, and then it was like, nope, they couldn't watch it because it was, you know, taken that. So
I just watched it 3 minutes ago before. I cannot believe you're bringing that movie up because I just finished it. I watched it whenever I had a free time, streaming on Netflix. So you can maybe let people know that it's available on Netflix streaming.
Okay, cool.
And I just finished watching it, and I was very disturbed by it.
Yeah, it was quite a stirring movie. Disturbing, stirring, whatever.
It really, really is.
And it sounds like what you're describing sounds similar to the, you know, because that's what struck me was the finding out the sort of reason of this quite amiable sort of survival skill type of, you know, young black woman basically saying that the economy is shit and they need some, you know, they need money to pay for stuff. So a lot of them take to, you know, selling drugs. It's like just you know, sort of this economical thing going on here, there.
Yeah, and the just a historical connection of drug use to certain groups. Society's war on drugs throughout history, American history anyway, has never really been about the drugs. It's been about the group that they needed to put in their place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with the harsh punishments and whatever, and just the whole putting it together the way they did in that film, which is that, you know what, you have an excess supply of workers that you no longer need. So whoever you don't need, you know, you got it in prison. And you'll pay a price for it, but it might be better than having them, you know, in some other kind of trouble with you or whatever.
So what
is it? It was put together in a very disturbing way.
Is there any kind of work there? Like, is it, from what I know of Mexico, is basically NAFTA, I don't know the exact verbiage, but basically NAFTA was sort of flooding the market with corn products, which drove the prices down, which then, you know, the local farmers couldn't make their typical money off of corn, so they started coming to, you know, coming to America. So it's like this vicious cycle. Is there anything, you know, in Honduras that's like what people normally would do to, you know, be safe and earn their way, but now they're sort of being forced because of the situation out of there, like you're saying, with the kids?
Well, my sense is that it's very undeveloped in the way that I've seen in Nicaragua. It reminded me in a lot of ways of Nicaragua, which is not that far away from it.
Right.
And the same kind of like people just eking out bare livings without having major employment opportunities, even crop opportunities on the level, I guess, that would be needed to lift the country out of poverty, but they wouldn't want agribusiness to be involved either, you know. But my sense was that there was no one big thing that dried up.
All right. Okay. What age kids were you, like, what is it? You're talking about the, you know, families, mothers sending their kids. Is he talking about like 15-year-olds or 20-year-olds or?
All different ages. Hmm. Very young in some cases. Hmm. Very young children have been coming over the border.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be horrible, hard if that's, you know, that they're saying this is the best choice for you to, you know, go somewhere else. And then
I mean, once I was there, I mean, kids. I saw and heard horrific things. I visited a village where there was a cleansing. There was a drug gang came in and settled all their gripes and debts and whatever. And numerous people died and numerous limbs went missing. And, you know, it was, yeah, it's some horrible things.
Hmm. So what did you, did you go there to meet, like, I know some of your Hope for the Children Foundation that you've gone to do a specific project, or sometimes you just go and, you know, follow the dot trail of who you meet to, was there a particular community or place you went?
Yeah,
to
there
to,
actually
know?
Was. I mean, basically, I think it would have been a wasted trip if I didn't have some connection. And the only connection I had to Honduras is a bunch of monks, Franciscan monks, who have a branch of their order there.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they're the ones who still wear the robes like St. Francis did.
Oh, wow.
And these guys are good. They work with the poorest of the poor in New York City, and, you know, they live very humbly and very simply, and they really, you know, live the Franciscan way. And they're the only ones I knew, so I contacted them and said, any chance that I can stay with you and you can maybe introduce me to some people and get me around and let me see some things? And they said, sure. So I stayed with them, and then they introduced me to people that live there and people that were doing a variety of projects in the midst of the insanity to try and, like, either shelter or protect kids or assist families. And the friars themselves had a number of projects going.
Hmm. That's nice to hear.
I was really grateful for that because I don't think I would have been able to just go through the country and wander around and safely been able to discover anything.
Hmm. Wow. Now, is there like a, was it urban area you're in or rural or both?
No, very rural.
Yeah.
Very rural. Yeah.
Now that's like, what is it? I want to get coffee at Trader Joe's. You know, they have one of their, Honduras is one of the brands that, so that, you know, there's got to be some kind of economy, genuine economy going on there, I would think.
Yeah. I'm sure there's bananas, there's beans, there's coffee, tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Very similar to Nicaragua.
So did you have any luck, you know, with like sort of making a connection or starting some kind of community project or building or anything?
They were able to introduce me to several projects, several individuals that were doing really good work. There was a man from a religious group from Spain that had a home, residential school for boys. And they would, you know, take these kids who really couldn't stay at home for whatever reasons, and they would reside at this school. And then I met a woman who used to be a religious nun. She left her order to start a couple of orphanages, for one for boys, one for girls, one for pregnant girls, and one for kids who were mentally challenged. And she was doing amazing work. She wasn't well physically, but very amazing person with the amount of work that she's done. And then I met another woman who was doing like some kind of poverty relief by offering meals and things like that. Hmm. So they all, I sat down and, you know, in extensive interviews with these people and just try to find out what they need and what I could do for them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I always tip my hat to the kind of people and places you you take on. It's always refreshing to hear.
Yeah, I met a group of Americans there that were pretty remarkable. In addition to those contacts I just told you about, I met like an American kind of missionary group that was very heavily involved and seemed to know a lot. I mean, not the whole group, but there was this one woman, her name was Carol, and she knew everybody and everything. And she was a tremendous resource. I can't imagine the trip without her. But she was able to actually put me in touch with a priest who is going to be starting a work training program to pull these guys out of the gangs. So the other people I met were trying to do, you know, remedial work, keep kids out of the gangs or whatever. This priest, and he said that he had a bishop with him that was also going to be working on this pretty intensely, is, how to actually take the kids who are already in the gangs and give them a way out.
Yeah, I think last time, I forget which country, probably Nicaragua, when we were talking about Nicaragua and Myanmar, you had said that the people you had met with, the gang members, were like a lot of them similar to the House I Live In story with the ghettos in the U.S., like that they were basically, that's what they had learned to do, and it was a way to make a buck and help their family, but they'd rather be doing something else, right?
Right. That was why we were able to, help a number of them leave that life behind.
And was it similar in Honduras? Were you able to, however prevalent the gangs are, were you able to talk to anybody?
I actually did not have any access to any gang members down there.
Yeah.
I met with people that had suffered at the hands of these drug gangs.
Yeah.
But there's a very big difference between the young men that I was able to sit down with in Nicaragua and the drug gang-dealing, trafficking culture that exists in Honduras.
What was the main...
I was in a remote village in Nicaragua.
What was the main...
Here, the country of Honduras is way more vital to the traffic.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like it's a more sophisticated, drug thing happening there.
And horrifically violent.
Hmm.
I mean, I think I met the saddest kid that I've ever met in any of my trips in Honduras. This young man was sitting under a tree, and it's the saddest face I've ever seen, and I was concerned for him. I don't speak much Spanish, and the kid didn't know me, so I knew I couldn't go over to him and ask him what was wrong, but they asked the people there, and basically informed me that, you know, his story was that his brother had been brought back to the family by the drug gangs in a plastic bag, chopped up in little pieces.
Oh, God.
And I heard of a number of stories like that when I was down there.
Yeah, it's horrible. Do you know, like, is there a success rate with the kids getting out? I mean, do most kids, are they able to get out of the country and, get to the U.S., get a job? Or is it like sort of like the Mexico border where we read about, some get through, some don't?
Yeah, I don't think I have any knowledge about what statistics might be, success rate on that or anything. That's a good question, though.
Yeah, seems like it's a little bit longer trek than Mexico.
Yeah. I know that I've been spending time and effort raising money It was interesting to me that the two people, the one nun who had the four orphanages, or ex-nun that had the four orphanages, and the one brother who had the school, they both asked for the same thing. Her for each of her orphanages and him for his school. What they really didn't have, and they felt would be a tremendous value, would be an outreach counselor who could keep in touch with the young people after they graduate from their institutions.
An outreach counselor.
So they were feeling that they felt like their kids were at risk, that they had given them a good foundation for, say, up to 18 years, but that once they would leave their institution and go out into the adult world, that they would need a support system to try and fend off the temptation to get involved with that life.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me, obviously, a little bit more severe, but it's kind of like a lot of what the U.S., you know, educational system is now, where there's at least stereotypically the getting a college education and then where are the jobs type of thing that a lot of people in their 20s are dealing with.
Right,
so
right.
It seems similar, but obviously seems much more harsh in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah, another, I don't know if you have any awareness or learn or can tell about the people there, but the Maya, I mean, that ancient culture that is so connected with the indigenous and, you know, a lot of the prophecies of our age now is some of the, even origin of some of the indigenous, like consciousness that I read a little bit about in that area. Is that something in the area where the people are, you know, still connected with that? Or is that just, is that like, you know, would you have to maybe go up into the mountains or something?
You probably would have to
find
that.
Find the people still deeply connected with that.
Yeah, any people I met that had a faith connection, it was with the Catholic or evangelical Christian.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I'm looking online right before I called you, and it was like, it does. The second paragraph mentions the Maya, and then prior to being conquered by Spain in the 16th century, so that's, you know, the Roman Catholicism got in there.
Right. And the evangelicals are throughout Latin America just scooping up fallen away Catholics.
Say that again.
The evangelicals throughout Latin America are very heavily about scooping up the fallen away Catholics.
Jeez.
So they both fry, you know, they both have huge numbers.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it's really upsetting because they were very, you know, piously devout people in Central America. El Salvador and Guatemala are very similar. I'd say a huge number of kids in my jail are, you know, Salvadorian gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another very peaceful, meek culture that just got completely inundated with the gangs.
Mm.
So is Guatemala. The people are very, inherently very sweet people, which is very disturbing and ugly that these gangs have, you know, totally ravaged those countries.
Yeah, it seems like an epidemic, you know, that area just seems like an epidemic. You know, a lot of South America's seemingly making, you know, somehow easier to make more improvements with some of the people down there. But still seems like Central America is still sort of in between or something like that.
Yeah.
So how long were you there for?
Very short trip, just a week, less than a week.
How was the food? I remember last time you were talking about, you know, you like simple food, and that was hard.
Well, fires eat very simply.
Right.
You know, basically ate like one meal a day. Oh. They don't have a lot of food around, you know. So they would make some kind of homemade big dinner kind of thing, and I would always enjoy that. What was really funny is that this missionary group thought that they were giving me a really special treat by sending out this little Caesar's pizza. and I was like cracking up because, you know, in my workshops with kids, so many of the schools and churches I visit, you know, will try and feed kids inexpensively and they're serving pizza. So I get pizza up to my eyeballs and then these people thought they were doing something really nice. So I thought it was really funny.
That's neat. Yeah, that's the neatest thing I'm learning from talking is just to hear that, you know, the Franciscan monks and that the, you know, people there do. Are there any other groups that are doing, you know, are there like sort of social work types or, you know, local Hondurans?
The one brother from the one school was from Spain, but this woman at started these orphanages and the other woman who was doing a lot of feeding, they were native Hondurans.
They were what?
They were from Honduras.
Okay.
Two women.
Okay.
They were doing a tremendous amount, so. They were great people, too. I'm really happy to be able to help fund them in some small way through my foundation.
Yeah, and then remind again, it's hopeforthechildren.org?
Hopeforthechildren.org,
yeah. Okay, great.
There's nothing on Honduras there yet. But,
okay. Any like future plans to go back, or are you just going to see how it is and stay connected and try to, you know, send some...
I'm going to play it by ear.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I would like to go back, especially if there's a way I can help this priest and bishop do something with the kids who are already in the gangs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can. I was really excited because at the time, I had just finished reading a book by Greg Boyle, Tattoos on My Heart.
So, say again?
Called Tattoos on My Heart.
Captions on and, My Heart? Captions?
No, Tattoos. Tattoos on My Heart.
Oh, Tattoos on My Heart, okay.
Yeah, by Greg Boyle. He's a Jesuit priest who was very well recognized for running one of the most effective gang rehabilitation programs in L.A. Like I said, he's a Jesuit priest who had really gotten his hands dirty, and the book was very inspiring. I just finished reading it, and I came back on fire to try and get him to go down there, because he has way more knowledge than I do about concretely how you get kids out of gangs and what things to watch out for and what things are effective and what things are a waste of time. But I've been really unsuccessful at getting him to go down or even getting back to me. So I don't know what's going to happen. So if I go back there again, and I think I will, I might have to go alone because I'm reluctant to bring any kind of young people, like I usually bring kids from America with me on my mission trips, to be of help and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I would want to do that in, you know, the most violent country on earth, you know. Maybe I'll go myself again.
Yeah, if you feel comfortable doing it. Boy, that's quite a thing to take on. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like an interesting line of study for you with all the people you deal with, the whole gang, you know, that process. I don't know much about it. It's just, as we're talking, it's striking how sort of that human or natural human urge to just be with people or be in a pack or have a group or a tribe or whatever you call it. But then, you know, when things get twisted, it goes that way.
Oh, it's the exact same phenomenon as all the mafias we have in America.
Hmm.
It's the exact same thing. Except the product that's being protected is drugs.
What is the what's the major drug there? Like cocaine or
yeah.
And is it, do you think most of it's going to the U.S. or go to Europe, anywhere?
Yeah, most of it's going. Well, I can't. I really
yeah.
don't. I take that back. I have no idea where it's going. But it's definitely
yeah.
flowing up north.
Yeah, like I
definitely
said.
Definitely flowing up north. Now goes from there to Europe or right from Honduras to Europe.
Yeah, who knows? There's a whole
who knows, yeah.
thing there. But yeah,
I just thought it's very ironic that the U.S. has a huge military presence there.
That is interesting.
As these drugs are leaving this country. And I thought it was also ironic that all the poppies are grown in and go through Afghanistan, where we also have a huge military presence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, it's like the two main drug sources or centers are both places where there's a heavy United States military presence.
Hmm.
I thought it was very, you know, that might be worth the story.
That is interesting, yeah. I mean, you know, from what almost everything I've read over the past bunch of years, it's the resources, the military, that it's in Africa, that too has happened a lot in Africa with the resources and the military presences. So it's, but specifically, like you're talking about the drugs, that is interesting, some like investigative reporter, a good story to do.
Yeah, somebody who doesn't care if they get killed.
Oh boy, yeah, that's a very touchy topic there.
Yeah, and I really do, you know, I just wish somebody who knew more about the gangs. I'm really disappointed with that Homeboys Industries, which is what this priest started in L.A. I'm very disappointed because if I were to be the one that goes back and tries to talk with them about turning things around, all I could share, I mean, for the young men in the gangs themselves, all I could share is, you know, a little bit of my experience from jail and a little bit of my experience in Nicaragua, but most of the rest of the knowledge I'd have to share third hand that I gained from this book that he wrote
mm-hmm.
about what he did that worked and didn't work when he was doing it. It'd be so much better if they got it first hand, you know? So I'm hoping I can still maybe convince him or somebody from his organization to go down.
Yeah, it sounds like the networking thing is more what would be helpful this time.
Yeah.
Speaking of investigative reporters, I haven't seen this movie. It looks very powerful, about Gary Webb, Kill the Messenger. Do you know the story at all?
No.
That's the, Gary Webb was a news reporter in the, I think it was the 80s, and he broke some stories about, I'm looking online to kind of refresh my memory here. An American investigative reporter, best known for his 1996 Dark Alliance series of articles about CIA involvement in cocaine trafficking. He investigated Nicaraguan links to the, was with the Contras and Reagan and that whole thing. And he basically got, I forget the details, but his job, you know, he was soon out of a job as a journalist. And I think he committed suicide. Like, he just, it was like he had no, there was nothing else for him to do, whatever, you know, that was his choice. But that's, you know, that's, so like you mentioned, yeah, that is a daunting task for anybody to take on doing investigative journalism on that whole topic.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So, let's see, what else? Anything else you want to say about the trip or...
I had a very interesting experience. I also went to Ecuador for the first time this summer.
Which one? Ecuador?
Ecuador, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's an interesting place. I've read a fair amount. Like, I'd say Bolivia, Venezuela, and Ecuador are the most fascinating ones that I read most articles online about.
Yeah.
And books too.
I left it on with my trip to Peru and Bolivia. We had an Ecuador on. We were got connected to Hope of the Children. Was approached by a woman, approached Hope of the Children for assistance with her project to provide like a school renovation and a computer room for a remote school.
Oh, wow.
And so we went down there to help her do some work, and it wasn't the most fulfilling project. The woman was very lackadaisical and just basically used us as free labor. And, yeah, they were nice people. Very contrasting in Ecuador. Where we landed, mm-hmm. where the airport was in Guayaquil, mm-hmm. honest to God, it was like being in Florida.
Mm.
And they say that there's a crazy number of people from the States retired down there. And the other reason is because, do you know the dollar is their currency?
In Ecuador?
The U.S. dollar is their currency.
I didn't know that.
I was pretty stunned at that. I had no idea about that either.
Huh. What was it? Somebody, maybe it was Bolivia, the Sucre. They started dealing, they made up their own, coin, what's the word? I forgot the word. Coinage or whatever. And then they called it the Sucre. I don't know how many Latin American countries, but obviously maybe not, hasn't gotten to Ecuador yet or taken over.
No, Ecuador, I don't know. I think I just explained that they had a huge rate of inflation, and the only way they had hoped to calm it down was to tie it to the dollar, and then they eventually adopted the dollar. So, yeah, but the contrast, the extreme, you know, pure affluence that you get like in gated communities in Florida, and the dire poverty just like across the street.
Yeah.
Pretty staggering.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic there. That's, you know, a lot of that going on, too much of it, but
yeah.
A lot of it going on. I started to work on an essay, it was like certain gated community thing seems to be morphing into this gated community thing is, on the small levels, and seems like people are getting a bit more, some countries are getting a bit more possessive, trying to control things more.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ecuador is an interesting mix of sort of positives and pluses and minus with the whole extractive industry. There's like a mixed bag of things that Correa is doing. So, but that would be...
Gasoline was unbelievably cheap. It was unbelievable.
25 cents a gallon or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Because the government is like, I don't know what they do, subsidizing it or whatever the government was doing.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, I couldn't believe how cheap it was.
Anything that people can do, besides some money donations or anything people can do to help, with your projects or with Honduras or, anything else you're working on aside from the, go to the website or send you some make a donation?
Yeah, no, basically, I mean, we're trying to keep these things going. So we added Ecuador, we added Honduras, and we really have a commitment still to all the old places in Africa and South America, and even inner city, you know, New York and the Navajo Indians and things like that. So whatever financial help is appreciated. Of course, I'd like to buy our bracelets made by our Bolivian street kids. That's always appreciated.
Oh, yeah, I have one of those. Those are beautiful.
Yeah, that project has been booming, too. If only my sales would be booming to match it, but... that's the biggest help we need.
Is that, do you think that could be something with in Honduras too? The like the art, you know, the bracelets, street art or whatever?
I'm backlogged tens of thousands of bracelets from Bolivia. I can't even think of any one another country project. But I don't, you know, if anybody, that's a good question, if there was some other way to, you know, have some kind of a business getting moving, you know, to employ some people. But that's, you have to have connections at the grassroots level or whatever.
That just seems like from some other documentaries, there was one called Urban Roots about the Detroit, and other documentaries I've seen about just even starting some, you know, local small gardens, like brings community together, and some of these people are like ex-cons or out of prison, and it's like they find a sense of purpose. So it just seems like in those deprived areas where something that can bring people together and be creative is a huge help.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, anything else you want to add or?
No, I think that's about it.
It's just it's hard to hear about what's going on, but it's refreshing to know that, you know, some people are trying to help, you know, improve things. So.
I was really happy to discover that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, just, you know, if I would have gone down there and just seen an awful lot of suffering and just, you know, said, well, where is somebody doing something about this? And had nobody, that would have been really disturbing. But the fact that I was able to, in a short period of time, make contact with people that were doing really good work and just with a little bit of assistance could do a little bit more to try and save a few more kids, I mean, it was very encouraging.
Yeah, well, it's nice to hear the Franciscans, too. That brings a smile to the face.
Yeah, these guys, they have the only free medical clinic in the country.
Hmm. Amazing. How old are they? They've got guys in their 30s or 40s or 60s or 70s?
They get a young crowd, the Friars. They have guys old. They're all young guys.
Hmm.
I don't think anybody could have been more than 40.
Amazing. And they're from Honduras, or they come over from...
No, they're from the States.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, from the States, they were all, fluent in Spanish or whatever. So
is there a name?
They tend to work in the four neighborhoods in the Bronx and Manhattan.
Oh, okay. Is there an official name of their group or?
They're called the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal.
Franciscan Friars of?
The Renewal.
Oh, okay. Neat.
Yeah.
All right, Tony. Wow, thanks again. It was always fun and informative to talk with you. So.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
You too. Take care, Mark.
And we'll go out with a tune off of YouTube, which appears to be a traditional song from Honduras.